This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, Joy listeners. It is Sunday Arts Magazine for another week. I'm Brendan Bale, and sitting opposite me is the lovely David John Hunt. Well, I hope he stays lovely for the next 2 hours anyway.
I am so lovely, you wouldn't believe it.
Now, it is a very, very special episode today. Two weeks in a row we've had special shows. Today is Radiothon. If you haven't been listening to Joy from Friday, it's all about Radiothon right now, and it is the most important part of the year for the station.
Absolutely, because this is the time of the year where we need you to sign up as a member or donate, but more important, it's all about members, because we're a community radio station. Community radio stations are run by volunteers, yep, but supported by their membership. And the board and everyone that's involved in Joy is a member of the station. And we need your support. Otherwise, if we've got three people that are members and everyone listens, well, not good enough. We need our community and the broader community. And as we know, there are so many people out there that love this radio station and support us because of who we are and what we are. And it's quite cheap to be a member. It's for individual, it's $84. Concessions, $42. Under 18 is $22. Family, $124. And if you're a business out there, it's only $300 to be a business, and you're actually listed on the business pages of our website because of that as well.
Which is a wonderful way to do it. You know, you ask around the office if you're in an office environment or an organisation, and, you know, everyone chip in and support what we're doing here. And, you know, but we do have a lot of great supporters, and, you know, we would love to hear from you today and tell us, you know, what you do love about whether it's our show or just Joy in general.
Absolutely.
We would love to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949, that's our SMS, or you can email onair@joy.org.au.
Yep.
Now, we have people, including Marcus, on the front desk that are ready and willing to take your phone calls today, whether you want to leave a message or, even better, renew or become a new member of Joy.
Or donate as well.
Or donate.
And do it now. Do it today. It's a murky old day. You're probably sitting around at home not doing very much apart from listening to us. But it's an important time for you to get on the phone now and become this member. Look, We got the most beautiful message, and I want to just read a little bit of it. It starts off saying, "Hi, David. I very much enjoy your Sunday arts program with Brendan Bale over here in Perth. I joined Joy and made a small donation to your very worthy cause. I was wondering if you might also do us a favor and talk about the fact that I have just released a book. Now, we're actually going to speak to Peter. And Peter, if you are listening over in Perth, which I believe you are because I've been communicating with him, we're going to speak to him in 2 weeks' time because he's released an e-book that was then published in England. And Debbie Reynolds wrote the foreword to it, which is bloody incredible.
Amazing.
So we're going to do an interview with him from Perth, but then we're also going to talk to him later in the year when he will be in Melbourne. So, look, there's people all over Australia or around the world that are listening to us. And like PD, can join up by going online and doing it that way.
That's true. It's true. Yeah.
And we've also got to thank Katie, who's sitting here. I don't know why she's sitting here. Is it because she wants us to thank her for the show, Three Chords and a Truth? So we've thanked her for Three Chords and a Truth. And have you been to the movies this week?
Well, I've only seen one thing at the movies this week. I did go to the theatre as well. But this one, I snuck it in. You know, it's been a long week, and it's been a very busy week for me at work. But the sequel to Now You See Me,
right,
which came out probably a couple of years ago now, directed by Louis Leterrier, the French director. And this one's actually directed by a gentleman by the name of John Chu. And this one sort of ups the ante. I don't know if you saw the original or not, but it was a lot of fun.
I did.
Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo,
yep,
whom I know is one of your favourites.
Yeah, well, he's such a damn good actor.
Wonderful actor.
You know, like, and so varied in his the roles he takes on. That's what I love about what he does.
And this is a bit more of a commercial exploration for him, you know.
Which he does that.
He does. He balances
it out. He weighs it up like the George Clooney's of the world and all that,
exactly,
where they, they've got to make a living.
They do, David. Yeah. It's tough in Hollywood. but you've got the likes of Woody Harrelson, I'll get that out,
yep,
and Dave Franco, who's James Franco's brother. But
that's
now
right,
it's quite popular in his own right.
Yep.
Which is good for him. He sort of started later in the game. But then you've got Lizzie Kaplan filling in, and I'm sort of a big fan of hers. She's filling in for Isla Fisher, who was pregnant during filming.
Right.
Sacha Baron Cohen's wife.
Yep. And I think they've got two or three children.
They've got a bit of a tribe now, which is great. And but she sort of fills in quite well. She's a lot more sort of blackly comic in her delivery, deadpan, I probably should say. And it sort of... It adds another element to it. The first one had a bit of, banter and a bit of fun there, but this one probably even sort of veers into a bit more comedic value as well. And then you've got someone like Morgan Freeman jumping in as well. And probably, I think he has a little bit more to do this time than last time. He was sort of locked in a cell for a lot of the first film.
Right.
So, well, he is in a cell for a bit of this one as well, but gets a lot more to do, and there's a lot more to his character, let's just say, without giving anything away. But
then there is a new person.
Of course, Harry Potter himself.
Yes.
Daniel Radcliffe, of course.
And do you know what? The really interesting thing, I read an article about this film the other day, and he said it wasn't until somebody actually did an interview with him about 2 months ago and said, oh, here you are, you're doing magic. And he said, it's so divorced from the Harry Potter that I never thought of that. Isn't it interesting? Well, it would be. It's obviously an adult, and it's more about the tricks of magic, where Harry Potter was
just part of the world
fantasy.
Yeah,
so I could understand why he wouldn't have seen the parallel, but of course there is. And he went, all of a sudden I went, doop.
There it goes. And it's funny because he plays, this bratty character, who's the son of Michael Caine's character.
Right.
So I've listed a lot of people in this film. Like it's a huge cast.
Yeah.
And, everyone gets to shine a little bit during it. So, I thought it was just a lot of fun. Probably could have been a little bit shorter. I think it dragged just a little bit in sections, but, finished really strong. And the introduction of Lizzie Kaplan's character is sort of an interesting way they did that as well, and kind of had to throw that in of like why Isla Fisher isn't in the film this time.
Oh, okay.
And it was a bit of a throwaway thing, but it kind of worked.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really interesting that the way they structured it, and having it sort of set partly in London as well, was really interesting. So I had a lot of fun with this one. So I think all in all, I will give this one, say, 3.5 stars. Not quite a 4-star film, more than a 3-star film, so 3.5.
Right, okay.
And a lot of fun. If you're wanting a little bit of escapist entertainment, which, there's not a lot of quality escapist entertainment out there at the moment. So.
I think people are getting very bored with all the action.
Comic book ones again. We keep harping on that.
We keep on mentioning it all the time.
It's quite valid. I think, for anyone who's not a huge comic book fan, like, it's nice to have something else to choose out there. So you can do a lot worse than this one. So Now You See Me 2, also known as Now You See Me the Second Act, which I quite like as well. So
that's a nice little
bit,
play
bit
on
more,
it.
Yeah, yeah, a bit nicer. So check it out if you can. You're listening to Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9. It's Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan Bales, my name. David Hunt is sitting opposite me.
That's right. And don't forget, it's Radiothon. We'd love you to join up.
We would.
So you can do it online, which is really simple. It takes about 2 minutes. It's very simple.
Easy.
Or ring Marcus and get Marcus to do it over the phone as well.
So our website is joy.org.au. And you can find out everything about the shows on air as well. If you want a little bit more information or even contact someone on air, they might be doing a great show that you really enjoy. You can get onto them specifically.
Yep.
But make sure you SMS in to us as well today. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we had a chat about what art meant last week, which was really sort of really interesting. And we didn't actually get to talk about what we thought was art. So we might get into that a little bit later today even. But before we do, people can actually go into the draw, our major draw for a Holden Spark.
Mm.
Like Joy, it's a designed to impress, just like us.
Aww.
And you're dressed very snappily today.
Oh, thank you.
The boy in blue. But before we go any further, well, we're going to go further. Now we're going to get into our first conversation. Really enjoy, really looking forward to this chat because we do have people from Nika in a fair bit on this show.
Yes.
But the thing is, everyone has such an interesting backstory and stories are never the same.
And their life is just, in front of them, is just going to be so exciting because Nika is so well known around the world now, and it's the credential of you can get work pretty much anywhere, and we've got two wonderful people sitting here with us now. Who are they?
They are Jordan Revelle and Charisse Rust from Nika. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's our pleasure. And what year are you?
We're in third year.
Your third year. So this is your first final performance that you guys have to put together yourselves. Is that right?
Yes.
And then you do the final one at the end of the year.
Yes.
Right. See, I know too much about it. Now, as Brendan was saying, we always like to hear your backstory. So tell us, where did the interest come from for circus or entertainment?
Well, I started I did a lot of work on my grandmother's sheep farm in southwest Victoria.
Wow.
And I just loved every part of learning how to do the sheep work, anything rough and physical. And just I really found what I could put myself through, the kind of hard day's work and just looking inside yourself and finding something to get you through that mob of sheep or get you through that day. And I also really enjoyed the kind of surprise that a lot of the farmers had when I was this little girl and then a teenager and what I could do and that kind of challenging.
What do you mean what you could do around the farm?
That's right.
Right. Yep.
And physically as well.
Yep.
And I loved challenging those little assumptions about what a girl could do. And then I found circus classes as a child and then...
What, in the town that you're in?
Oh, I'm from Melbourne.
Right.
But I
okay.
spent as much time as I could
in the country. Right, yep.
And so I found circus Oz classes, that like community classes, and there it wasn't strange to be a strong girl. It was encouraged because it means you could do more. And and so I found circus just incredibly empowering, and it gave me a creative goal and lots of wonderful physical challenges for me to then kind of push my strength and creativity in that way.
So where was the point, Charisse, where you said, this is what I want to do, this is what I actually want to study rather than have it as a hobby?
I had a real struggle with that, actually. I was doing it all through high school, and then I did an arts degree after high school, and I was just using all my money and all my free time on circus, but I was still like, oh, it's just a hobby. And then when I finished that degree and I was thinking, what do I do next? And I thought, it's a now or never thing. You know, I don't want to regret this when I get older, and I have to make the decision now that I'm going to really follow this as my career. So,
and was Nika always on your radar? Like when you started in circus, was that always the pinnacle that you wanted, you know, when you made that decision?
Yeah, and it definitely was. And I thought that it was quite out of my reach. I thought it was, you know, you have to be a level 10 gymnast to get into Nika or something like that. And I certainly had to train myself a bit to get the good circus basics. But I kind of dedicated a year to that and auditioned and got in from there.
just tell our listeners, for anyone that doesn't know about Nika, although it's very well known in Melbourne and it's just there in Windsor, it's a university degree that you get at the end of it, isn't
it? That's right.
Yeah.
And which, how good is that as well? So you're developing your craft, as you do with any university degree, but this is, it's in performance.
That's right, and it's a very well-made course. Maybe 4.5, sometimes more hours a day of the physical training, our specialties, like our circus majors, if you like. But then we also have kind of an extensive range of theory courses and dance and performance as well. So everything that you need to be a really functioning and prepared member of the circus industry when you graduate.
Yep. And what I also love about it is these special performance workshops that you're going to be presenting, which starts on Wednesday this week, and we'll get to that a bit later. You guys come up with the concept for the performance, is that right?
Our concept for our own act is very much our own. We all have individually created our acts, and then it's looked at by a director, and that, developed further with their help, and then it's also meshed together into a show. An overlying theme.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic, and great experience for you as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Jordan, give us your story of how you got here.
Okay. I grew up in the Sutherland Shire in Sydney, and from a really young age, whenever they put music on at preschool or anywhere, I would just start dancing around and jumping around. And actually,
look at the smile on his face. He's loved talking about this.
When I was, I really loved watching musicals and stuff like Sound of Music, Mary Poppins and stuff. They were my favourite
movies. Julie Andrews must be your favourite.
Yeah, Julie Andrews. I cried when she flew away at the end of Mary Poppins.
Oh, it was actually on television, I think, was it this morning? I saw it in the TV guide and I thought, oh, damn, I would have watched it again.
Wizard of Oz as well. Mum had to make me a pair of ruby red slippers for my 4th birthday. but anyway, so she saw that I really liked to dance and express myself that way, and I came to be about the age of 7, and my younger sister Penelope was put into ballet, and I saw that. I kind of just sat around and watched for a few weeks, and then I was like, no, Mum, I want to do that too. And so Mum was like, all right, we'll do it, and put me into the class, and then I really enjoyed it. That was at the age of 7. I kept going with that, and then picked up jazz and contemporary classes as well till the age of about 16, 17, and then that was getting into about year 10 or 11 in high school, and I just by then I really did not enjoy high school at all, and I was like, I had to decide, like, what do I want to do after this? I've got to start to not so much just pick one thing that I want to do, but, I've got to start to think more seriously on what I really want to do.
Yep.
And I just, the joy that I get from doing this couldn't be surpassed by anything else.
How did you find out about it?
About Nika. So what I actually did, I left high school, went to a full-time dance school for 2 years, Evan Bowe in Sydney, and they saw that I started to become interested in contortion. I just found out about contortion on the internet, and I really wanted to push myself and my flexibility to be able to do that. They saw I wanted to do that, and so they said, look, we keep trying to make you go off in this direction and become a male dancer, but we can see that you really want to do this, so you should audition for Nika. They told me about Nika.
Yep.
They put me forward for it and got me to actually fill out the audition sheet, and then I went and did it, and it was great.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the show in just a minute. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine, the special edition, because it's
Radiothon.
All about Radiothon. So come on, sign up, you people. Get those fingers working.
Joy.
Thanks for tuning in to Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9 for our special Radiothon edition for another year. I can't believe it's been a year since the last one.
I know.
But please get involved. If you haven't renewed your membership, get onto it. And if you haven't become a member before, you wouldn't believe how easy it is to do it on our website, joy.org.au. But we are chatting all things circus, aren't we, David?
We are.
We've we've kept them around, Jordan Revell and Charisse Rust from Nykaa. Now, we're going to talk about the showcase that is, you know, your... preparing for at the moment,
third
throwing
year.
Everything into. So tell us a little bit firstly about the seeds of these ideas, you know, personally, and then how you actually bring those together to create something cohesive.
Well, this is our opportunity to really show the audience, us as individual performers.
And are you marked on this as well?
It is. It's an assessment,
right,
yeah,
okay.
Definitely. So we have to bring together everything we've learned over the 3 years, skills, like circus skills-wise and also performance-wise.
And what are you specialising in?
So I specialise in aerial straps,
yep.
Which is quite like Roman rings in the gymnastics.
Yep.
And it's funny because it's a very male-dominated apparatus.
Ah,
you get these funny little kind of... gender
stereotypes,
and even in circus, which is quite diverse. But
and Jordan, what's yours?
My specialty is aerial contortion, and in this show, I perform that on an aerial ring.
Oh, okay. Yep. No, sorry. Go on. Keep on telling us about.
So it's quite. Like I said before, I've always found circus very empowering for me. And when I entered Nykaa and I found aerial straps, I just. Found it was what suited me and how I like to use my body perfectly. So it wasn't like a competitive thing. It was just super natural for me.
But it's so risky though, isn't it? But it isn't because you have been trained well.
That's right.
And that's what I love about it, because sometimes if it is something a little bit touch and go, there is somebody standing down the bottom, isn't there?
Definitely. And they never. It's a very controlled process, like as you learn it at Nykaa. It's, they don't suddenly tell you to do something you've never done before.
Jump off of that.
That's right. There's the trainers there are just world class, and they have such incredible progressions. So drills to prepare you for each thing and build it up really, really sustainably.
Yep. So to get the idea is that each of you bring your specialty in, and then it's put together in an overall show that so it flows nice and evenly.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's this show called? Because we haven't mentioned it yet.
The name of this show is Things Not of This Earth.
Oh, so what does that mean?
Well, it's quite a fun show. It's
A bit kooky.
Yeah, definitely. It's got a theme, a B-grade sci-fi movie theme.
Oh, Brendan, you're going to love
that.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Okay.
I'm sensing a bit of Bowie-esque sort of stuff to it as well, a bit of out there.
It's quite stylized, yeah.
Sounds just amazing to me.
So did you guys actually come up with that idea as well? No, that was your...
We've got two wonderful directors, Hayden Spencer and Emma Sargent, and they've been great helping us with our individual acts and giving us that directorial feedback on how we can get the most out of our acts while we're still writing it and being kind of the executive producer of our acts.
Right.
But then they've put them all together, so it's not just a cabaret of unrelated acts. They've kind of threaded them amazingly together with this whole kind of backdrop of the B-grade sci-fi film.
Right.
So.
Does it also take it further as well, like not just this performance, but do you sort of take little bits from each other or think that maybe I can push mine in a different direction because of other performers?
Definitely. You always, as a circus performer, you don't want to just get stuck in the one thing. You always want to be looking for new ideas, and everyone, we've got such a diverse bunch of people in our year level.
We all influence each other.
Yeah.
So, any internationals?
Yes, there's one. My housemate is from New Zealand.
Okay, because over the years we've had people from all over the world
that come to Nykaa,
come in here. So, which is pretty exciting, because then that's your network of friends and colleagues. Yep. You're not ready to jump on a plane and join the circus somewhere else in the world? You know, like Canada? You know, for that one big... can you go over an audition, or do you need to get a bit more under your belt after the end of this year before you could go to Canada and Circus Olay, of course, I'm talking about?
We actually had a wonderful opportunity earlier in the year where a lot of us did in fact audition for Circus Olay.
Yes, for the next production that they've got starting here soon. Yeah, we actually spoke to the woman who came out to do it. Yeah, and it's incredible because she was a performer and has now moved into other areas. So it's not the end of the road, is it?
No.
So which is
Cirque du Soleil is definitely just one small part of the circus industry, as well as it's especially in Europe, there's some wonderfully interesting things that are going on there. So lots of opportunities.
You spoke about the, sort of the great knowledge that you learned through the course, but you know, how much do you learn about the realities of the industry? And I guess to be sort of a self-promoter and all the sort of, I guess, the boring or the business side of things, you know, how much do you learn about that?
Quite a lot, actually. We have a business class all through the degree, and it's run by someone who has a lot of experience in that kind of arts production and marketing
area.
Yeah. And it's, we learn exactly like you said, how to do tax for our kind of freelance business, and it's a very, very useful course.
And because at the end of the day, you don't have to go somewhere and join one of the big companies. You can do it yourself, can't you?
Yes.
I know quite a few people who and they travel the world doing it, and they do the corporate stuff as well, and there's two or three of them that do it and is making a very good living out of it.
Definitely. And it's quite scary to do that. Like, lots of people make small companies and take them overseas, and that is a big risk to take, but there's been some very successful Australian companies that have really hit it big overseas.
But then again, you've also got places like the Fringe Festival here that you could do a show next year, and the Fringe Festival in Adelaide, which is huge, and there's opportunities there that you can maybe do it with fellow students once you've left.
And some of us have already done that while we're in the degree as well, which is quite nice to get that real-world experience as well as being the wonderful supported environment of NICA.
Now, it starts on Wednesday night. How long? It runs for a couple of weeks, is that right?
Yes, it runs from the 8th of June till the 18th.
Right. And what's it called again?
Things Not of This Earth.
Right. And how can you book tickets?
You can book tickets online at nica.com.au. That's nica.com.au.
Or you can just show up on the night. They're not always sold out, but some nights they are.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would definitely book. But if you're just in the area, it's literally just off from Chapel Street. What street's it in?
It's in Green Street.
Green Street. And Tusk is on the corner, isn't it? So on at Windsor end of Chapel Street. So just go down there. An incredible space. It really is quite wonderful. And support really important people in this town. Thank you so much for coming. I'll see you on Wednesday night.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
That's Radiothon time.
Radiothon
Get
time.
Get on to it. Joy. Thanks for tuning in to our Radiothon special of Joy's Sunday Arts Magazine. Now, we've had two special weeks this week, obviously, Radiothon. Last week was our second birthday or anniversary, maybe.
Yes, of our show, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yes.
So, we're just having a ball these weeks. And if you want to get in on the action, do become a member. We would love to hear from you today. Call us up on 1300-JOY-949. And also, easy peasy.
Yep.
joy.org.au.
Mm-hmm.
I did that last year.
2 minutes.
And this year as well.
Yep, 2 minutes. That's all it takes to sign up online.
Super, super easy. And make sure you listen in on Friday morning as well as Friday evening, of course
Friday
for your
drive.
Show.
Yes.
But our Hour of Power, 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. Friday the 10th of June. So this Friday, listeners, where Gary Singer and Jeffrey Smith will be matching everything donated.
Yes. So not your membership.
No.
So your membership separately, but any donation you make, they match it.
Exactly. So if you can, please tune in then and help us support our wonderful radio station.
And, of course, your donation is tax deductible.
It certainly is. And you can go into the draw for our Holden Spark major giveaway.
Absolutely. Now, who have we got in the studio now?
Well, we've dragged them in. It's quite warm in the studio, so it wasn't too hard of a sell. Emily O'Brien, and we've got Madeline Jevich.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm saying that correctly.
Yes.
From Proof. But before we get into what you're talking about today, we always like to get into people's backgrounds. And although you look very young, ladies, I'm sure you have a lot to say. So let's start with you, Emily. You know, what's your background? How did you get into the arts? How did you catch that bug?
Well, I think it sort of came from a fairly nomadic childhood, travelling around, and both my parents are artists, fine artists, And I think sort of out of that, I was never going to be as good a painter as they were. So I originally started in dance, then went into acting and am now directing.
Right. And why directing? You know, what pushed you in that direction?
Well, I think as an actor, I tended to spend a lot of my time thinking about the story as a whole, and sometimes that made it difficult in the work that I was doing because I would try and take care of the whole story rather than just living moment to moment. And in directing, you sort of get to have this overarching view, and I get to work with four characters in this play as opposed to the actors who get one each. You know?
She's a workaholic.
Yeah. And a control freak.
A little. Uh-huh.
But what we've heard from, previous people that have come in, having the acting background, then going into directing, does give you a different perspective. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I guess because I know the actor's process and am very sensitive to that. It's a way that I guess the communication between us, we speak the same language. So it's easier to be able to hopefully inspire them and support them into some places that aren't always so easy to get to. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Madeline, let's talk about your background then. So, you know, what's your background in, you're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you catch that from? When did that first little spark of inspiration come from?
Well, my parents tell me it was when I was five, so I actually can't really remember. It was, you know, I want to be an actor and I'm going to get it, that kind of thing. And then from that kind of moment on, I just started doing classes. I lived in Adelaide, so I went to an acting school in Adelaide and then did a few short films and, yeah.
Some good people from Adelaide.
Yeah.
David
included.
Yeah. Hey there.
But I find it really interesting that at a five-year-old that your parents saw it and you were saying, I want to be an actor, and then they followed it through by giving you the acting classes. You know, that's such a, you know, I keep on asking nieces and nephews and friends' kids, do you know what you want to do yet? And most people have no idea, most kids have no idea what they want to do. So I find it interesting that you decided then.
I know, and stuck it through, and it's still that passionate about it, you know? That's kind of, it's really rare. I'm really lucky that I had parents that supported that from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Emily, you would have as well if your parents were artists, visual artists. They would have been encouraging you to follow
my heart, basically. Yeah. Yeah, in whatever direction it took me, which was, you know, not always the smartest thing.
Yeah, well, a lot of artists in all different shapes and forms tell their children don't, because it's too much of a struggle. So it's interesting that you ended up in that sort of world. So, but then what happened after you did your acting classes? And as you said, you've been in a couple of short films.
Yeah.
And now, do you live here in Melbourne now?
I do. I moved 5 years ago when I finished high school, just because I just wanted some more work. I wanted more opportunity. And I found a great school in Melbourne called 16th Street Actors Studio, which pretty much started my real journey to becoming an actor.
How hard is it though to get roles, and especially paying roles?
It's quite competitive, I think, but I mean, it's so different for everyone. You know, I've been, I think, really lucky, but I've also worked really hard. So, you know,
incredibly talented. So.
Thank you. So it's kind of all, you know, very specific to each individual, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a very, very hard world. And Emily, are you sort of working full time in this arena or not?
Well, it's interesting that you say so. The school that Maddie went to, 16th Street, I'm the studio manager there. So, yeah, I'm very fortunate in that I have a fantastic sort of job that pays all the bills that I am inspired and very extremely passionate about, that then affords me the opportunity to be able to go and do art projects outside of that.
Yeah, and but the wonderful thing is that then you've got the pool of actors, haven't
true.
You?
True.
You know, like,
yeah.
So there's a
They're
method
all there.
In your madness.
Yes.
So, Emily, how did you get involved in this production?
Well, Mark Yates, who is in the show playing a character called Hal.
Have we actually mentioned what it is yet?
I did before, but we'll say it again. So it is called Proof.
Yeah, wonderful play by David Auburn.
Which is pretty amazing because Tony Award winner.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also won another award.
Pulitzer Prize.
Wow. You know, yeah. Like, so the credentials are pretty damn good.
It's a remarkably written play. It's incredibly witty, extremely touching, and something that I feel because it's centered around a family, and you do get to view sort of behind closed doors of this family, and so it's something that I do believe that many people can connect to. So it's a wonderful, wonderful play. But Mark Yates started his theatre company. This is their first show called Artifact Theatre. And he approached me at the start of the year and asked if I would be interested in directing. And I had seen a scene from the play in a few acting classes and actually didn't think I liked it. There was something about it I was not that into. And then I said, well, you know, I better read the whole show. And I read the whole script and fell deeply in love. It's an incredible, incredible story.
So it's about family and behind closed doors.
Yeah, so at a time, a very big turning point in four of the characters' lives. And it's... at the time where basically Maddie, who plays the lead character, Catherine, her father has passed away. Her father had a debilitating mental illness and was a once great mathematician.
Oh, okay.
And it's at the time of his passing, and Catherine goes on a journey to discover how much of his genius and madness she has perhaps inherited.
Right. Maddie, what drew you to the part, apart from obviously Emily, you knew her. And
she's fantastic. So I knew that I was taken care of in that regard and it would be a great, amazing creative process, which it has been. But also, the play's beautiful. The writing is absolutely stunning. So there's just so much work, which is good. and also the actors, the cast is just phenomenal. So I'm really lucky.
I was going to ask both of you, but I'll start with you, Maddie. So what was your way into this character? You know, how were you able to relate to her and really, you know, get your head around it?
I'm still trying to get my head around it. but like Emily said, it's about family and it's about relationships, and she has a sister, and that was my main in, and it was that connection to Claire, Catherine's sister in the play, that I found at first really fascinating, and it was their interaction that kind of really got me centered in her, first of all. But then it's just there's an energetic about her. She's a really different, strong, resilient young woman, and I think, you know, I think I have a little bit of that as well. So that's kind of, where I feel connected to her.
Well, you are on Sunday Arts Magazine, and we're talking all about a play that's got the credentials, and it sounds like an amazing play called Proof. We'll be back in just a moment. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9. I won't talk over the ads anymore. It is Brendan Bales, my name. David Hunt is the gent sitting opposite.
Oh, a gent.
He is well, for now. It's early in the afternoon. But we've got a lovely message in, David.
Yeah.
Hi, David and Brendan. It's David the Fashion Queen.
Oh, hello, David.
There's two fashion queens around. Great to hear the interview with Nika students. To be honest, I had, of course, heard about Nika before, and it's seen its classmates. Seen its classmates in Paran, but didn't really know much about it. Sunday Arts has become my second favourite show on Joy. Keep it up.
Oh, thanks, David.
So obviously, the first favourite show is the Friday Drive, of course.
Yes.
But thank you so much for messaging in. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to do the same, 0427 Joy 949 or onair@joy.org.au. But remember, you can become a member at joy.org.au as well and go into the prize for our Holden Spark major giveaway.
Right, now we've got the girls are still here from the play Proof.
Yes, Emily O'Brien Brown and Maddie Jevich. So thanks for sticking around, firstly.
Thanks so much for having us.
But I asked a question of Maddie before about how she got into her character. But as you said before, you're playing with multiple characters, being the director. So, you know, what was your way in to sort of tackle these characters and their motivations?
Yeah, well, I guess the thing that struck me profoundly about this play was the father-daughter relationship, and that it's around grief. I lost my own father back in 2005, and he was, you know, sort of on the outside, not in mathematics like in the play, but he was a bit of a mad genius himself. And I related deeply to Catherine's journey through this play, and the nature of grief and how we can flip from incredible sadness to hilarity to brutality all in the same moment. It kind of rips us all open, and I think we really get an opportunity to truly see each other and through that hopefully get a reflection of ourselves.
And that's what family life is like, isn't it, on a daily basis. But and it's really good to see it within a play or a film or an opera or whatever, because you go, oh, my family's just like everyone else's families. Right. I thought I had the kookiest or twisted family. You know, right. Like, it's like it out there everywhere. Or my family's actually quite normal compared to this lot I'm seeing in front of me now. Yeah, which is often the case. You are on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
We love you listeners out there. Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, Brendan Bale and David Hunt with you till 5 o'clock anyway.
Yes.
When Robin Mossy will be on.
Oh, those two. PM. Oh, God.
We love them.
Put up with them if you have Moss. I don't think they're here yet. I'm picking
Mossy
on them.
Is.
And
Mossy is.
She,
I can see her.
She'll walk past the window any minute and glare
her
in.
Her arm's pretty much back to full force, so she'll give you a knockdown.
A good whack.
We've kept Emily O'Brien Brown and Madeline Jevich in the studio from Proof, and the production company Artifact Theatre as well. We're sort of talking about, we want to talk about that basically. You know, independent theatre is, it's hard, but it also is, there's a lot of integrity to it. So can you tell us a little bit about that, about getting these kind of projects off the ground?
Well, I guess from the start it's for the love, because no one's making any money. And there's something, I think there's a quality that comes with work on that level, because everybody has to come with passion and their love of something, and they will work, as this cast have been incredible. They are working tirelessly and wholeheartedly in this work. And I think, you know, we've given up every hour of the day to do it, and that's the only way to do it. But you are afforded the opportunity to have complete creative control of something and really tell the story the way that you want to tell it, albeit on a next to nothing budget.
Yeah, which is always the case, isn't it? And people putting their hand in their pocket, you know, to do this, which is wonderful integrity as well, isn't it? As you said, not doing it for the money, because there isn't any. But yeah, and offering us stuff that we might not normally see.
That's right.
Which is one of the most important things I'm feeling these days.
So with this production, you know, what are you hoping people will take away from this one? I guess I can ask both of you.
Maddie?
I think, yeah, it's just so good to see, you know, when I see a play that I can relate to and characters that I can relate to, and a message that I think is really important. And I think this play is about hope and about facing who you are and being honest with yourself and going for what you want in life and taking ownership of, you know, your life, I guess. And I think that's really important these days especially. So, yeah, that's what I want people to take away, I hope. I hope that's what we get.
Oh, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that the stories that connect most deeply with me are stories that inspire people into facing their demons and having the courage to stand on their own two feet the next day and move forward. That's the thing that pulls at my heartstrings, you know, every time I see it. And I would hope that it speaks to people in that way. And also, I swear, I know we're talking about grief and death and things, but it is incredibly funny.
And well, families are, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. So you are taken on a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's on at the Alex yes. Theatre on Fitzroy Street in St Kilda, around the corner from my house. what's it like moving into that space? Because you'll be doing it this week.
Yeah, we'd love to know. the set is being built tomorrow in the space. The entire play is set on the back porch of a house in Chicago.
Okay.
So we're building the back of a house. I say we. I'm not picking up a hammer. But yeah, so we're building the back of the house and bump in tomorrow, and then we're going to run it and run it and run it until we drop, until opening night. So yeah.
And it's exciting that there's a venue like the Alex now.
Absolutely.
In town, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, there is, well, there's so many theatres around Melbourne, but there is also the need for more, because more and more people are drawn to this town.
Yeah.
Because so much comes out of here. So it's good that we've got it. So that's wonderful. Now, it's called?
Called Proof.
Yes.
By David Auburn.
And how can you get tickets?
You can get them through Ticketek, also the Alex Theatre.
Just go to their website.
Yeah.
Just Google Alex Theatre. It'll all come up, and that will be the easiest way to get it.
Yeah, and you can also friend Artifact Theatre on Facebook.
Oh, well, that's
and,
a good idea.
And see all our little promo videos, and
yep.
We keep everybody up to date with what we're up to.
Fantastic. Oh, that's really good. And it starts this week on the 9th, and it runs to the 19th.
That's right.
Thank you so much for coming in. And all the very best
with
this production. And whatever happens next in your life. And we'll see you back here,
I'm sure.
Oh, I hope so. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine. And it's all about...
Radiothon.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine. David Hunt is sitting opposite me.
I'm
Brendan Bale.
Yes, you are.
And we'll be that for another 40 or so minutes.
Oh, good. 50, so we can be actually. Different people after that.
We can be. We can be whatever we want to be.
Right.
And that's what Joy is all about.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Get into the action though. Become a member. Only $84 for an individual and concessions $42. And or you can go the business route, $300 only for a whole business. So sign up for that. And go into the draw for our brand new Holden Spark, thanks to Holden, of course. And it's super easy. You can phone up 1300-JOY-949, Marcus, or some other wonderful Joy volunteer will be answering the phone. But you can also do it online from, you know, if you don't want to talk to anyone today, you might have a bit of a cold. So it's super easy. Get on the website, joy.org.au. Yep.
And it's so easy because there's the big sign on the front page and you just click that and it will take you about 2 minutes to sign up.
Exactly. Everything Radiothon today, but we're fitting in a lot of our interviews as well.
Yes.
And I can't wait to talk to this lady sitting opposite us. Linda Roberts, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
From City of Melbourne. Now, tell us a little bit about your background. You know, you're working for City of Melbourne, which is wonderful. But
In public art,
yep.
Which is something that I'm a big supporter of. But as Brendan was going to say...
Well, you know, how do you get to that stage? You know, where did you sort of fall in love with the arts?
Well, I came to Melbourne because of public art, in fact. I was lured down here from Sydney. My background before I moved into the arts was, don't take this against me, but I was trained in architecture.
Oh, wow.
But what I became passionate about public space and our cities. And
why did you say don't hold this against me being an architect? Because architecture, I think, is one of the most... regarded as an art form, or is that dying a lot because of the way it's handled nowadays?
Well, I think that's what's really fantastic. If you really look at what's happened, let's say with Arts Victoria and the shift that's happened with Creative Victoria, I think that there's that expanded view of creativity and the arts, and incorporating architecture, urban design, right through to programming. I mean, I think that's really fantastic that that's kind of where we're at, and we have architects that are working with us at the Biennial Lab, in fact, a project we're working on.
Right.
In your background, did you sort of find there were limitations, though, and that's sort of
being
changing?
An architect.
Ah, yeah. Look, it's interesting. I was very privileged to be working with a female architect who was just becoming well known in Sydney. We worked with a lot of with some really fantastic clients, but working for the city and working for the people of the city is actually what I became really passionate about. Much more, you know, it's interesting about those client relationships, and that's really important. But then having that sense of working in the public domain is really...
So millions of clients then, really.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because in Sydney, they have that famous sculpture on the... On the Sea? Is that what it's called? Sculpture by the Sea.
Sculpture by the Sea, Bondi, yeah.
Which is amazing because you do that walk from Bondi around to Coogee and you've got all this amazing sculpture for about 3 months of the year. And we don't have anything like that here in Melbourne, which is a bit bizarre because we're heavily known about the arts here and we've got so many places that could happen. Do you think that we should be working towards doing something like that?
Well, Ballarat, interestingly enough, is about to start a biennial, so that's going to be really interesting to see what that's like. Certainly the project I'm working on is a different type of, it takes that idea of a significant project that looks at the city every 2 years. Maybe it doesn't have as large an aspirations as maybe Sculpture by the Sea in the sense of it taking over kilometres of a site, yep. But certainly there's also a lot of parks in Melbourne or beyond in regional Victoria,
yep.
Where you start to get some of those
right.
kinds of...
And now along the freeways, there's some amazing... one of my favourites is the one going down to, on the way to Frankston, Mornington Peninsula, is the Garden Gnome.
Oh, cool.
The,
I knew
the
you would
silver
say that,
Garden
too.
Gnome. I just love it. You're on Joy 94.9. It's all about Radiothon, and we're going to hear about it now.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Joy 94.9 for Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan Bowles, my name. David Hunt is sitting opposite. John Hunt.
Yes, get it right.
Get it right. SMS 0427 Joy 949 if you want to get in the conversation, because we are talking to Linda Roberts. She's from City of Melbourne, Program Manager for Public Art. I hope I got that correct. What a title. It's amazing that, you know, you get to sort of look at all this stuff and actually start planning for, you know, for a whole city of what the public art is. So maybe just tell us a little bit about your role and, you know, what your daily life is trying to wrangle all these, you know, I guess artists and art in general.
Because I don't think there's enough public art here.
Oh, yeah. Say that more. Yeah. once you've done your radiothon, you can start working for us, doing some spruiking. We'd love that.
We love it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then come down to QVM where we're doing our project. Well, certainly I am just one of a really great team of people, both in terms of Arts Melbourne. The public art framework that we've developed for the program comes out of an art strategy that was developed with a creative team that worked on that a couple of years ago. But that's actually built out of a lot of conversations from the community. So while there's the team of people at Arts Melbourne, there's also all of our stakeholders and talking to us about what they want to see in the city. And that's from going from developers to arts organisations to artists who are really, if we don't have artists, we don't have a creative city.
Absolutely.
Through to people who live in the city.
And because it's not something you can flippantly say, I'm a sculptor, I want to do that, because it costs money. And it has to stand up to the weather and skateboards and kids with ice creams crawling all over it. So it's not something that costs $25 and you throw it up and then it's there for history. And that's the other thing, is that it's got to stand the test of time for hundreds of years to come, like some of those beautiful statues around this city.
And I suppose it's a really important thing for considering about those really significant stories that, particularly when you're talking about permanent public art, those durable legacies that are in the city. They're talking about a moment in time. At the moment, we're working on a project, marking Tana Minaway and Mabohina, the first two men that were hung in Melbourne, who are Indigenous.
Yes. I mean, there was something stories. Part of them on, White Night, wasn't there? Yes. That was heavily involved.
Yeah, that was projected on the NGV.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's Josh Muir. It's a really amazing art project. So we're working with Brooke Andrew and Trent Walter on that, and that's probably our next really big permanent project. But we are also looking at how the city is changing. The city is about to double in growth,
yep.
And over the next 30 to 50 years. So that's really massive. But then how does the city, in terms of art and how it expresses itself, how is that then enmeshed in the city and the change in terms? So we're thinking about that and starting to think about the future from that point of view.
Is it somewhat sort of future-proofing it so it can be, I guess, appreciated from future generations maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think public art has so many roles. It can open up really interesting conversations and dialogues. It's a marker. It's a placemaker. If we didn't have all those sculptures up Swanson Street, we didn't have the public purse of, those sorts of playful elements that make the city what it is. Mm.
And just this one around here, I read an article the other week about all of this, and the one in Russell Street, which confuses literally on the corner of Burke and Russell, where a lot of people look at it and go, what the? But I've just loved it. It's just because that makes you think, well, yeah, and you see people standing there looking at it thinking, what is it? Because it's quite involved, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, that came out of a commission from around the late 90s, and it came out of a residency for that artist. What's interesting there for me is that artworks really do pose a question, and that's great. It doesn't need to always be answered.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's a great work that does that.
Yeah, but do you know what? I also have a bit of a problem with one, and it's nice to actually grizzle about one now, is that I was so excited when the tram going into the ground on the corner of
David Bell's piece.
Yeah, yeah. On the corner of Spencer Street and Flinders Street. Yep. But it's in a really bad position because there are flagpoles all the way around it. Now, okay, the city of Melbourne, I know, make money out of those flagpoles, and they needed them for that part of town, you know, advertising the latest events that are on in town. But it's hiding it. It's hiding it. And then there's a beautiful palm tree behind it as well, which again, so therefore you can only really see it from one direction. And then that direction, there's all flags in front of it. So the placement of it is so important as well, isn't it?
And it's actually very interesting about a placement, location. What's great about that tram is when you are on the train and you might cast your eyes over and you might suddenly think, oh my goodness, is that a tram that's just kind of flipped up? I mean, so there's these great things that also public art, you can see it from different directions.
Yep.
So
you see, David's never been to the West, but I can speak I can speak from experience. I used to see it every time I'd come in from Footscray, so it's, to me it's not hidden that much, really.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I see it every day going to work as well.
And yeah, you do, but with flags around it everywhere. No, I have a real problem because I love that piece and the sheer fact that it lights up at night, you know, like the inside of it lights up. But
yes.
I'm just disappointed. I'm just disappointed that it's not somewhere out by itself a little bit.
So there is a bit of backstory about that tram. It took a year to find a site for it.
Really?
So I'm now probably revealing the back history. Yeah, so we're taking a different approach now with permanent public art. We're really thinking now around where are sites already changing, where the city can be a gracious host for work, where there's already change occurring, where the city is actually redesigning a space so that an artwork can be situated and become enmeshed in that location. So you could say that the tram kind of lands on that spot.
Yes.
Well, probably the new approach that we're taking is working with a location over a longer period of time, the integrating it with the urban design and landscaping of the site. So I suppose in lots of ways, the project we're working on recently, Queen Vic Market, that's actually, we're starting a very early front-end approach to that, where we're starting to really start to think about a location.
Right, because obviously that's all getting its big revamp very soon, isn't it? And so you're looking at something in particular for there. Is that right?
Yeah, look, the project we're currently doing at Public Art Melbourne Biennial Lab, it's inaugural project. It's curated by Natalie King, so we have a really fantastic curator that we're working with to work with the city. It has two kind of folds or two key components. One is capacity building for artists, of which we have David Cross and Claire Doherty, who we've brought over from Situations, a UK arts organisation, to work with artists. So there's capacity building on one level, to say, let's work with these artists with early mid-career. We had 150 artists from around the country apply, so really, you know, a fantastic response to work with us.
How many are going to be moving forward with?
So currently we have 10 ideas.
Oh, 10 ideas.
And
right,
at the moment 14 artists working with us in the lab's context. So that means that we're working on a site for quite a long time. So the works at the moment, we're working for 2 weeks on site in a kind of a warehouse space just opposite Queen Vic Market. And then those works will be developed over a 3-month period and presented at the Melbourne Festival. So there's a period of time where we're kind of really spending quite a lot of time to think about the location, about where those works will be before we just land.
Right.
And so we can make sure Queen Vic Market are happy with that with that location, you know, so right. we won't have poles
right.
hiding
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll
yeah.
chain myself to them if yeah. they do. So I love the idea of it being launched with the Arts Festival. So will they be in place by then or not? They will be.
So the works, the resultant works that will come out of the biennial lab, we don't know how many will actually come to fruition. So we know at the moment we've 10 ideas. We hope all 10 will
I
come through
so.
To the next stage.
Yep.
We will launch on the week of the 17th of October, so the last week of Melbourne Festival. And we hope that what will happen is that there'll be an unfolding. It's not going to all happen at once.
Uh-huh.
Over a period of maybe a month or 6 weeks,
yep.
Works will kind of evolve over that period of time.
What do you mean by evolve? You know, the actual artists there welding in the street or no?
There could be a bit of that.
Right.
We won't know yet.
Okay.
The fabrication and the process of making on site might absolutely happen. What we might have is that there are a lot more performance works, or there's maybe an artist working with storeholders, or they're actually setting up a radio broadcast platform in which they're having conversations to community members, or it might be that there's an installation of a neon piece of work that looks at text, or it could be that an artist is developing a kitchen where they're actually cooking nutritional foods on site and drawing from the market.
So is there an easy way for, you know, community members to get involved at this level? You know, have you made that sort of available?
Yeah.
Well, we've had it booked out almost immediately. Was Claire Doherty, who is our lab co-convener with David Cross. She's giving a talk with David at the Wheeler Centre on the 14th of June. There's probably, potentially, Wheeler always says, it's always, even though it says booked out, it's probably always good to, if you're really
just
desperate,
check.
Just talk to her.
Well, we'll be right back because I want to be there. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine, and it's all about Radiothon.
Joy 94.9.
Happy Radiothon, Joy listeners. It is Sunday Arts Magazine for another week. Very special week. We are getting the word out about our Radiothon because it is very important to keep the station running and keep us on the air more importantly.
Yes, absolutely. Well, hey, how else would you find out about the arts in Melbourne?
That's very true. That's very true. And, you know, we're very privileged to have, you know, this opportunity to talk about the arts, something that we hold very close to our hearts.
Absolutely.
And so big thank you to Barbara from Spotswood. And also Stephen from Melbourne as well, for, you know, staying in the Joy family.
Yep.
It is a family. So get onto it, you know, renew your membership or become a new member. We would love either of those. And we would also love some donations as well.
Yep.
Because we can always use those. And if you go, well, you can go into the draw for our brand new Holden Spark as well if you become a member or renew your membership. Now, we've kept Linda Roberts in the studio, and, you know, it is Radiothon today, and it's all about volunteers and also supporting arts, you know, organisations. And you have a background in another arts organisation. Tell us a little bit about that and volunteering for them.
Yeah, so that was really funny. I was kind of... After my life in architecture land, I spent many years volunteering and moving into the arts. And I think a lot, I think it's probably volunteerism is such an important part of the arts. They're the unsung heroes, I think, of our community in terms of their cultural champions. And I worked on so many art projects, art festivals, or curating projects and volunteering on radio shows or having a show on FBI or Bondi right. FM, my local Narrowcar station,
yeah.
cutting my teeth.
So FBI is the main community radio station in Sydney these days, isn't it?
There are others, but I think it has a very strong following considering it's the newest.
Yes.
One of the newest community
yeah.
radio stations.
Because Sydney never had the community radio background like Melbourne has, because what got in the way was Double J. which then the government bought and made it Triple J, and so therefore it got left behind a bit, and then FBI tried for many, many years, and finally it got its legs, and you were part of the beginning of it.
Mm. That's actually, yeah, I mean, in terms of the FBI.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is where the interconnections of backgrounds in design and moving into the arts and working on the studio build and volunteering my time to do that work, and that's really crucial to work with. But you're also doing that with a team. So not only was I volunteering my time, but also the builders were. We had a whole bunch of volunteers painting with us and fabricating. 2GB gave us all of their... We pulled out their studios.
Yep.
So, you know, that's the thing. You become really resourceful.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we did exactly the same over the years of Joy, but we're a lot older than what FBI in Sydney is. And it's only been in recent years we have got all the new equipment. And like how the whole computer system here now, we've only just had it, haven't we, Brendan? It's only been the last 3 or 4 years because we couldn't afford to computerise everything.
Yeah, and I think thinking about digitisation of community radio and the fact that we need support federally.
Yes.
You know, these are really important things, and that's why, from a radiothon point of view, the community, it's so important to support community radio for that very fact, because the whole context has changed. You know, it's all computerised now, digitisation.
And I think people do have a bit of an assumption that there is a lot more support from government agencies out there for, you know, arts organisations, radio, you know, community radio stations and all that. So we are very, you know, very happy to have people supporting us because we do need it.
Well, and we don't have any government support. Mm. That's the thing. The wonderful thing is that you work for the City of Melbourne, and we're in a City of Melbourne building. For those that don't know, it's a beautiful Art Deco building, you being an ex-architect. And we're on cheaper end. We couldn't afford to be here if it wasn't for the support of the City of Melbourne. And, so thank you, City of Melbourne.
Thank you, City of Melbourne, yeah. But in the larger scheme of things, we still need a lot of support.
I think it's really important that we create spaces for artists. No, it's just not just the spaces that, like this, for creating spaces to build work, but space in the city to enable artists to test out ideas, to actually develop new works and open up to the community more broadly.
And I'm curious about, you know, public art is obviously on a larger scale. So, you know, what type of artists sort of get involved with that? You know, what kind of one-on-ones have you had with these type of artists? Do they only do these large scales, or are they across the board?
No, I think this is what's fantastic about having this two-stage process, is because we're working with artists, some of which may have a stronger gallery practice, and they're moving out into the public domain, and this is a chance to try something out that they haven't before. Or it might be, a lot of contemporary practice, artists work, they're not working just in one medium. They're responding to a context or a community. So it means that what they choose in terms of medium or, the materials or the duration of the work or, you know, how large it is, how small it is based on the context in which they're operating.
Well, I know a sculptor that does very industrial stuff, and he can't afford to do it because, you know, it costs so much, but he works with other sculptors who get a commission, and then he's employed to help with it. So therefore there's sculptors behind the scene who can't afford to do their own, but they're in that creative world with another sculptor.
There's actually, I think that's probably what's really fantastic about Melbourne. What lured me here from Sydney was, there's a great creative ecology here. And that's what's so fantastic about, from working on radio through to public art, to galleries, etc.
And so what, are you seeing things now that are telling you what the future of art is going to be?
Well, certainly, especially when we're thinking about Queen Vic Market, that's certainly what we're thinking about. So this is an opportunity to really start to open up and connect to a really rich site with a really incredible bunch of people that live there and work there, and in terms of intergenerational stories. So we've got a chance to think about what might happen long-term in terms of permanent public art. So at the moment it's temporary, but then we're thinking with the view of what are these ideas going to bring for maybe permanent work down the track.
So how can people find out more about it? Is there a website to go to?
Absolutely. So it's melbourne.vic.gov.au/biennial lab.
Right.
And from that, you'll find a link to a blog that we are currently just developing, where every day we're going to have a bit of an update on what's happening.
Right, fantastic. Well, that's an important thing, because we feel that the average punter feels how can we be involved apart from going to looking at it when it's finished? But there are, by just following it, it can be very interesting, can't it?
And we expect that you're not just going to be looking at it in October. You are going, there will be works.
Good.
Where you will be getting, you'll be eating things, you'll be potentially performing, or you'll be talking to people. It
yep.
just won't be a simple observational
right.
project.
Now, what the Wheeler Centre, you
yes.
mentioned there that they've got a talk coming up. When is it? You said it's sold out.
Yeah, Tuesday the 14th of June.
Right. But do you reckon you maybe go online and have a look?
Yeah, look, I think Wheeler books out, but certainly some people don't show up. So if you haven't had a chance to get a ticket, we can always talk to the Wheeler Centre. Or, I mean, obviously, when we get to October, we'll do a call for volunteers as well to engage and work with us
yep.
To support the project. So there are multiple ways in which, a bit like what I did 10 or 15 years
yeah.
ago,
yep.
we'll be doing the same for the Biennial Lab.
Thank you so much for coming in. Fascinating stuff and something that I'm very passionate about, and especially that tram that's hidden behind all those bloody flagpoles. So Linda Roberts, thank you so much for coming in today, and can't wait to get down the track in October to see this all unfold. You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Radio Fun 2016.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan Bale and David Hunt. And we're running out of time, Brendan.
We are, but we're going to squeeze in one more interview. And very excited to talk to these two. We've
yes.
got Pat Miller and Lara
Karisties. You did well.
Oh, I try.
What nationality?
Hungarian.
Oh, right. Can you speak the language?
I can understand.
Right.
I can understand it.
Right, but you can't speak it anymore?
A little bit, so I put sentences together.
Right. And I suppose you grew up saying, I don't want to speak it.
I was actually speaking it till I was about five,
right.
and then I refused.
Yeah. Oh,
and now
yeah.
I regret that.
Now you regret it. You hear it so many times. But anyway, we're not here to talk about your language problems.
No, we're here to talk about a Mr. Il Signore. Tell us a little bit about it. It's lyric opera. Pat, you are the artistic director and conductor, and Lara, you're the director.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. Let's cut to the chase. Tell us a little bit about,
lyric.
The show.
Yeah.
All right, if we're going to start with lyric, I'll kick that one off. Lyric's a boutique opera company based in Melbourne, actually in residence at Chapel of Chapel, which I'm sure is a venue very familiar mm-hmm. to
Absolutely.
The base here.
Yep.
So in amongst all the gorgeous cabaret and stuff, where they sort of boutique, glamorous, beautifully costumed opera company, and we're opening this week with a one-act opera by Rossini called Il Signor Bruschino, which is a fancy way of saying the Mr. Bruschino's Bruschini. I don't know. Yeah, we're working on
plural.
That one. Plural, yeah, the more than one guy with the same name opera, which is very cute and beautiful music, and we're really proud of what we're bringing to this audience. And Lara's the director.
So, but hold on, yeah, how do you put on an opera in such a small space like that? Is it stripped back? It must be stripped back with orchestra and set and whatever.
It's a challenge. Yep. we've been doing shows at Chapel for about 5 years now, so
you know what you're doing.
No. yeah, thank you. Part of the brief actually is, you know, for those who are familiar with the space, that it gets very, when you put the seating in, it has a sort of a one way you can use it. And actually, we're not using the seating bank. This is opera in the round, actually. So we've got the big seats out, and the audience is sitting on three sides, with the orchestra basically on the fourth, and all the actors and the set is in the middle of the space. So
right,
it's actually
okay.
incredibly up close and exciting to have these opera singers there. It's
so,
really cool.
So does that cause a problem? And we'll talk about the director of the show. with sound? Do they have to be moving, facing all directions all the time?
Oh, definitely.
Opera is changing so much, isn't it? Mm. You know, like, where it used to just be standing there and you didn't really do much. Mm. But we had Opera Australia in the other week, and they were saying it's gone. Those days are gone where you've got to be able to roll and tumble and fight and do this and do that.
In five languages,
Yeah.
And I think it's important, though. The contemporary audience expects a lot more from theatre. It's what happens when we grow up watching movies that are, you know, directed so brilliantly. Everything's up close and even on your iPhone. And I think we expect the same. And having our opera set up like this, I think, does offer the same sort of experience. It's really up close and you can see their faces. It's really exciting. Yeah.
And you're the conductor as well. It must be wonderful because some of the music from opera, well, most of the music from operas is just so, you know, like, even if it's like that you're telling a terrible story, the music is just beautiful.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. Look, I mean, I've got the best job in the world. I get to say, I love this piece of music. I want this person who I love to direct it. I want this person who I love to design the costumes and these people who I adore to sing it. And then I get to put that on the stage. So it's pretty cool.
And so where did that love for opera come from? Was it an early age thing? Or?
Yeah, my mother would describe me as being very theatrical from a young age. but it was...
A show-off, in other words.
Yeah. I mean, I had always been a musician, but it was being taken to the opera and just falling in love as a kid, you know, with that intoxicating combination of theatre and music and the experience thing, you know, getting to, you know, to dress up and go and do something. That was really cool.
Mm. So, Lara, did you have something of a similar experience?
Yeah, I actually started out as a cellist when I was young and then fell into singing in the chorus, the children's chorus for Opera Australia.
Oh, wow.
So at a young age, I was already immersed in the musical world. And then growing up, I became a singer and then I've kind of moved on and now a director, originally from Sydney, moved to Melbourne. So it's kind of nice. This is my first opera directing. So to come back to my roots, and I have a huge love and passion for music and I will support it.
So what are the challenges of directing an opera compared to something else?
Right. I guess it's
and
a great...
the advantages as well.
Well, Pat's rolling around with laughter at this moment.
No, it's the question I keep asking myself throughout this whole process, because as an artist you have to be self-critical and you want to grow. And I guess the biggest thing I've learned is for opera singers or opera performers, singing and the music is number one. Then comes, you know, the movement and, you know, the scenario and the rest of it. So for me, I usually work with the physical body and then develop to the text, whereas this way it's the other kind of way around. Mm. So it has been a challenge, but it's been a great learning curve for me. And this has been a great experience because Lyric Opera started this workshop lab for four directors to come in and work with Suzanne Shaundy. She's been the mentor on the project. So I've learnt a lot.
But like what David was saying before about movement and that sort of new breed of opera,
yeah.
Was that exciting for you to sort of take that even further?
And especially with In the Round.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, even if it wasn't opera, doing a show In the Round has its challenges.
Yep.
But to add in opera singing and then the orchestra and all that, it definitely, it's been challenging, but it's been great fun to do that and to discover it. But also for me as a director, I love watching the performers grow throughout the whole process.
Yeah.
And they definitely have.
And what a great experience for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As well. I should imagine that would be one of the key things, is doing opera in such a different shape and form.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what sort of look has it taken?
It's gorgeous. I love it. It's originally set in the French countryside sometime in the 1800s, blah, 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 blah. But Lara's sort of stroke of genius on this whole thing was to set it in an Italian fashion house in the 1960s. So it's very glamorous.
Their Vespas.
Everything.
Yeah.
I fought for one. I fought really hard.
The fumes, Pat.
that.
Yeah, the fumes, yeah. But no, it's high fashion and very glamorous because we wanted to find an environment that would bring this, you know, it's a very light, charming scenario, but to bring it to life, to give it a context that would be recognisable to the contemporary audience. And we've done that very successfully. It looks fantastic.
And tell us the name of the production again.
So Il Signor Bruschino, or just call it Bruschino because that's what we're all doing it, or Bruschino, or you know, we've heard every possible combination of it.
And what's the history of this production?
The opera?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was a really early opera by Rossini, who, I mean, has been one of the most well-known opera composers at all. And if you know that sound, his sound is recognizable to anyone. It's so catchy and and full of life.
Yeah.
But it was an early one he wrote for Venice in 1813, when he was trying to make his name as a composer for a little tiny little gorgeous opera house that had a lot of up-and-coming singers in it. So it was really him trying to say, here, I can show off, but also allowing the singers to do so. And actually a couple of members of the orchestra too. There's a few little tricks and surprises along the way.
Surprises in the show.
Good. Yeah.
But a small opera company and finances would be tough. And all of a sudden here you are doing it with, you said the sets. Well, you wouldn't need a lot of sets, would you? Because if it's in the round. But the costumes, where does your money come from?
Well, as long as everybody who's listening comes along to see the show, well, that's where a lot of our money comes from. We're supported quite a lot by the City of Stonington, particularly through our residents at Chapel Chapel, and we're incredibly grateful for that.
Okay.
But most of it is we don't receive any sort of federal or state funding. So there's some wonderful people who do support the company.
And everyone does it, I suppose, on a shoestring budget. And
yeah, I mean, everyone's paid, but yeah, it
but
is.
But it's not,
yeah,
not top dollar.
No, it's not top
yeah.
dollar.
Yeah. But how wonderful for everyone involved, you know, orchestra, set designers, costume designers, and the cast and you guys to be putting something special like this on.
Yeah, it's really great to be creating something. You know,
that's
what we do, yeah. And we're also very lucky at Lyric that we've found our niche within the audience. So if you want to see La Boheme, Traviata, you know, those sort of works, either Opera Australia, and particularly our friends at Melbourne Opera are great at doing that here in the city. We've got our spot doing the small niche boutique, the lesser known works, the crazy things, and there's a great space for that, and we're really enjoying being there. And also the space, like with our opera director's workshop, to give people like Lara a chance to experiment, and that's been so cool.
Yeah.
Just to say, here's
great
an opera,
initiative.
Go.
Yeah.
You know, for these fabulous theatre makers.
Oh, look, I think it's just wonderful what you're doing. So how do you book tickets? Do you just go through Chapel of Chapel?
Yeah, absolutely. So we open Monday night at Chapel of Chapel and play through until next Sunday. The show only goes for, it was about hour 15?
Hour 15. 15.
So there's plenty of time to go out for dinner on Chapel Street, grab a few drinks, see the show, have a few laughs. It's a short opera sung in English, so everyone can understand what's going on. It looks gorgeous, as I keep saying.
Okay. Look, I just think it's fantastic that an opera company like yours is around in this city. We're so, so blessed with everything. So congratulations on that front, and I can't wait to see it. It sounds wonderful.
Great. Thanks very
much. Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
Radiothon 2016.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for tuning in to the last part of Sunday Arts Magazine for another week. It is our special Radiothon 2016 edition of the show.
Yes, and how wonderful the people we've had on today. We've had Public Art, we've just had the Lyric Opera Company in, doing on a shoestring budget. There is so much wonderful stuff that goes on in this city. We're so blessed.
We're so blessed, and you know, I guess we know firsthand as well what it takes to sort of pull together an organisation, and especially like an arts organization as well, that does, you know, in general, and anything independent runs on the smell of an oily rag when it comes to that. And it really comes down to the passion of the people involved. And, you know, I can only speak for myself, my passion for this organization.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a testament that you've been at the station for as many years as you've been. How many years is it, David?
I've been around for about 10 years now. Yeah, so
and, you know, you don't stick around unless you sort of are passionate about something.
Absolutely.
So.
But just quickly before we go, you went to the theatre this week, didn't you?
I did. Well, Friday night I went to Double Indemnity, MTC's new production, and even though there's a film from the 1940s that was based on the original novel, this the new production is based on the novel and not on the film.
Okay.
And it was good, but it did have me pining for the film. I'm a huge fan of that one. Mainly because it was the screenplay was written by the director Billy Wilder and Raymond Chandler,
the pulp
novelist, who was insanely talented, and you know was the go-to guy for anything noir related.
Right.
So,
and so, how many stars would you give it?
I would give it 2 out of 5.
Oh, Brendan Bale.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little bit harsh on that one because the original is a 5-star.
Right. Okay.
So, but you know, if you're into pulpy stuff, you know, maybe give it a try.
All right.
If you're really into noir.
All right, have a wonderful week, everyone.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.